is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran reiterates its unwavering stance on three Persian Gulf islands, saying that it will never compromise on the country's territorial integrity. Arrest of European Parliament official and four others linked to a corruption probe implicating a Persian Gulf state sparks calls for reform in the EU institution. And charities warn of social catastrophe in the EU if the bloc's governments fail to provide greater support to households. We have a report. Hello, everyone, and very warm welcome to World News. Iran's foreign minister says the three islands of Abu Musa, Lesser Tunib, and Greater Tunib in the Persian Gulf are inseparable parts of Iranian territory. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Iran will not compromise on its territorial integrity. He was reacting to a joint statement issued by China and the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council at the end of the Chinese president's official visit to Saudi Arabia. The statement affirmed what it called peaceful efforts by the UAE to reach a solution to the issue of the three islands through bilateral negotiations. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said Tehran had lodged protests to China against the statement. He quoted the Chinese envoy to Iran as saying Beijing respects Iran's territorial integrity and that the Chinese president was seeking to help promote peace and stability in the region. Iran's foreign ministry has summoned the UK ambassador to Tehran over what it calls the continuation of interventionist remarks by British officials on the country's internal developments. In a statement, the ministry said it's lodged protests against the UK's support for terror and rioting and its decision to impose sanctions on Tehran over its response to the riots. The statement said efforts by London and UK-based media to incite riots will lead to nowhere and will rather breed the Iranian people's hatred toward Britain. The statement said Iran reserves the right to respond in kind to anti-Iran sanctions. UK has repeatedly censured Iran over its actions against rioting and vandalism, accusing Tehran of staging a crackdown on peaceful demonstrations. London has imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iranian individuals and entities, citing similar pretexts. Former British lawmaker Lembito Peak says the West is running a campaign to weaken Iran so it could dictate terms to the country in any future negotiations.
Yeah, there are total double standards here. This isn't the first time, of course, that the UK has transgressed into this territory. In October, I believe, a similar thing happened. Direct answer to your question is this: Iran can complain, but it's quite obvious that there's an orchestrated strategic objective here, and the objective is to cause great trouble for Iran. You can see this in the turning of the screw when it comes to sanctions. You can see it in the remorseless propaganda as well. And for what reason? I suspect it's because they want to weaken Iran to accept Western terms in any future negotiations. But you're right, there are double standards. When you look at the oppression of protests in the United Kingdom, that's one thing, and they'd be the first to complain if Tehran was encouraging in the street demonstrations in London, but at the same time they feel they can do what they like from here towards Tehran. And if you look at it objectively, it just doesn't add up.
U.S. push to cancel Iran's membership in the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women has prompted anger from Tehran. We discussed this issue and more with our guests earlier in our news review program. Here it is.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Iran has warned the United States against its push to cancel the Islamic Republic's membership of the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women, denouncing the bid as politically motivated. Iran's envoy to the UN, Amir Said Iravani, said the U.S. move is contrary to the fundamental principles of the UN Charter. He said that if the U.S. push succeeds, it will create a dangerous precedence within the world body. Iravani noted that the U.S. bid is rooted in false claims and unsubstantiated allegations. The envoy stressed that the illegal initiative is yet another U.S. attempt to abuse the U.N. for the sake of its own political goals. He warned that any such move will be against the essence of the U.N. Foreign-backed riots erupted in Iran in September, following the death of Mahsa Amini, who fainted at a police station in Tehran and died in the hospital days after. Hakimeh Sagayabiria is an academic and political analyst joining us from Tehran. We also have Scott Bennett, who's a former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer, joining us from San Francisco. Welcome to you both. I'll first start with you, Hakimeh Sagayabiria, if I may. You've taken a look at a push by the U.S. to basically use the U.N. to fit its own narrative of how it sees Iran, and yet the U.S. itself is in violation of many different aspects of human rights overall. How can then there be any really legality behind the way that the U.S. wants to use the U.N. for its own purposes?
Thank you for having me. Let me begin by stating a fact, and that is that the United States is the only so-called Western democracy that has not ratified the UN Convention on removing all sorts of discrimination against women. The UN Convention on against discrimination against women, and that is a fact. And so there is no question, you know, there is no ambiguity here that this is a politically motivated move by the United States. Everyone knows the situation of women in the United States. There are many, many different sorts of problems, including, you know, the problem of sexual violence against women, which is something that has been documented, you know, in the U.S. military. We have that. Among you know, the U.S. police force in different cities, we have that, and of course, you know, among the women in general, that, you know, there is this statistic that every 68 seconds, another American is a victim of sexual violence. 90% of these victims are women. There is no question that this is a politically motivated move. And if there is one country that doesn't belong there, it is the United States of America.
Well, Scott Bennett, you heard our guest there, and of course she starts out with saying how the U.S. has not ratified the U.N. Women's Rights Convention. I can't say anything above that. When you have that on U.S.'s report card, then where do you go from there?
Well, I think Amir Sarabani should simply rise to the podium of the United Nations and say to the world, if the United Nations and the world wants to discover the grotesque abuses of women, it has no further to look than the United States of America. It is the United States of America that uses women as instruments of its color revolutions. This is just another example of a regime change operation that the United States and Israel, the Zionists, are attempting to do against Iran, using a complete false allegation using women as a battering ram to try to knock Iran down, and it won't work. But more importantly, the UN envoy can rise to the occasion and indeed lead the world to see things through the light of truth, and that is, the United States of America is the greatest oppressor and destroyer of women. It is the United States of America that is encouraging men to surgically remove their reproductive parts and run in women's races and swim in women's swimming competitions and engage in weightlifting competitions, annihilating all women in the running, removing women from college graduate degrees and scholarships. It is the United States of America that is encouraging its little girls to engage in hormonal therapy and transgender surgeries, and encouraging its little boys to engage in transgender surgery. So the United States is a toxic leper colony full of LGBT, homosexual corruption and toxicity, which is the last nation that should be advising the world on how to respect and honor and glorify women. The United States has no memory of the value of women as mothers and wives, as indeed women being wives and mothers are the center of the universe from which boys and girls grow up into men and women that are wholesome, that are emotionally stable, that are constructive, that are peaceful. It is mothers that provide that natural affection, and mothers and wives that hold the home together. If it wasn't so comical, it would be tragic that the United States has deformed into this asylum of lunatics that thinks that there is no gender anymore. And I think, honestly, Iran needs to rise to the table and point to the realities that the international community in Indonesia has just risen and passed a law forbidding cohabitation, which the United States used to have in the 50s. Russia has risen and written it into its constitution that homosexual propaganda shall not be taught to children.
Thank you, Scott Bender, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer. And thank you very much, Hakima Saraya Birya, academic and political analyst from Tehran. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
A probe into corruption allegations involving EU lawmakers sends shockwaves through the European Parliament, prompting strong reactions from officials throughout the bloc. European Parliament Vice President Eva Kaili and four others have so far been arrested in connection with a corruption probe into money payments by a Persian Gulf country to influence decisions of MEPs. While prosecutors have not yet named that country, a legal source close to the case says it's Qatar. According to prosecutors, the state in question is suspected of influencing decisions of the European Parliament through cash payments or gifts to top figures. Qatar says it is not aware of any details of the investigation, adding any claims of misconduct by Doha are gravely misinformed. Charities warn of social catastrophe in the European Union if the bloc's governments fail to provide greater support to households. EU leaders will agree further sanctions against Russia in the coming days over the Ukraine war. Previous measures imposed on Moscow appear to have backfired. Jerome Hughes reports.
The EU started out as a peace project. Some lawmakers say the bloc is becoming more authoritarian. A meeting of justice ministers on Friday heard at least €300 billion worth of Russian assets inside the EU have been frozen since March.
There are 1,359 individuals and companies on our sanctions list with assets and financial resources all over the EU. We cannot let anything slip through the net.
With even more sanctions on the way for Moscow, EU officials are now using torture analogies.
Every time that there is a need, we turn the screw further.
But at what price? The EU's energy sanctions targeting Russia are strangling the bloc's economy. Rents and mortgages are rising steadily. Young people in precarious jobs are at greatest risk.
Very, very bad, really bad. It's like everybody knows somebody that lose a job, that lose that is their people losing houses, families losing houses.
It's quite depressing for us to think that, for example, as for me, I'm studying a degree and I'm nearly certain that I'm not going to find a job when I'm done with it.
EU social affairs ministers met here in Brussels on Friday.
Many people, many households are facing difficult moments and we should leave nobody behind.
Charities say it's already too late for many and words need to be replaced by actions. At the same time, the EU is able to send billions of euro to the Ukrainian army and government. We do not hear anything about peace negotiations. Instead, EU leaders will meet here next Thursday to agree on more funding for Ukraine's army. On the same day, the European Central Bank will announce interest rates are to go up further. Critics say that priorities are all wrong. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A number of anti-system parties held a meeting in Rome to cement their alliance. None of these parties sit in the Italian parliament today, and this is while disaffection towards politics and political institutions has reached unprecedented levels, as our correspondent in Rome, Max Civilli, reports.
On Saturday, a string of anti-system parties labeled by the Italian media as the forces of dissent gathered in Rome to discuss the challenges being faced by Italy and the EU and future strategies. The meeting was attended by political groups including More Sovereign and Popular Italy, Reclaim Italy, an alternative formations advocating for the protection of Italy's sovereign interests and for shielding a growing number of Italians who are paying a heavy toll to what they call a dictatorship of neoliberalism.
In short, we are under a dictatorship, a regime that has stripped us all of dignity, rights. We can't get decent jobs anymore. Our constitution has been vilified. Our youngest generations have been taught the wrong values.
Independent journalists and geopolitical analysts also attended the meeting. They slammed the EU for its vulnerability to corruption and NATO for its belligerent posture. They also argued that the energy crisis was purposely triggered to favor the energy giants and their shareholders.
NATO is primarily responsible for what's happening in Ukraine. A long-planned operation which has also involved the US Secret Services since the 2014 coup in Ukraine. We believe nations should reclaim their sovereignty and be free to strengthen ties with any country they want.
This affection for politics is running wild in Italy. The turnout for last September's general elections was about 64%, the lowest ever recorded, 9% down compared to the 2018 vote.
Our party was boycotted when we ran in the elections last September. The Italian media simply ignored us. Furthermore, about 4 out of 10 Italians did not vote, meaning that the current parliament only partially represents the will of the people.
Following the outcome of Italy's latest elections held in September, which saw a right-wing coalition led by Giorgia Meloni emerging as winners, all anti-system parties have remained out of the parliament. The once anti-establishment five-star movement managed to garner 18% of the votes, but its section in the parliament seemed to have lost both power and potential now that the party has moved towards more moderate stances. Max Civili, Rome.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the UN and international community to put an end to escalating Israeli crimes committed in the occupied West Bank in Al-Quds. Now, the movement issued a call and a statement on International Human Rights Day. Hamas said the world should help end the unjust siege imposed on the Gaza Strip and enable Palestinians to defend themselves with all possible means until the end of occupation. The Israeli regime has recently intensified its deadly crackdown on Palestinians. Israeli forces have killed nearly 220 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and besieged Gaza Strip so far this year. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
It seems the impact of the war in Ukraine on the American economy, as well as the energy crisis during the cold season, have forced the American people to ask the authorities to reduce America's support for the conflict in Ukraine. And even in opinion polls, majority of Americans say that Ukraine should reach a peace deal with Russia as soon as possible. We have taken a look at the World Press and Media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Hill newspaper has covered this story. A recent opinion poll has shown that Americans are divided, with about half of the people in the United States saying Ukraine should be urged to close a peace deal with Russia. Results of the Ipsos poll, released on Monday, 5th of December, showed that 47% of the American public who were interviewed in the survey believed that Kiev should be forced into signing a peace deal with Moscow as soon as possible. It also found that about the same percentage of Americans, 48%, were saying that the United States should support Ukraine for as long as it takes, regardless of the potential costs to American citizens. That percentage has decreased by 10 percentage points since July. The survey, which was conducted by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs from 18th of November to 20th of November on adults from all across the country, and has a margin of error of 3 percentage points, found those Americans who were saying the United States should urge Ukraine to settle its conflict with Russia were partially concerned about the costs of the Ukraine war on American households grappling with economic difficulties. Meanwhile, in the United States, the rate of inflation has soared to a level unprecedented in nearly four decades, while credit debt reached levels unseen in three decades and unemployment was expected to rise. Most economists have predicted a return to recession, known as a double-dip recession. Political observers say the primary reason the Democratic Party is set to lose control of Congress as a result of the midterm elections on 8th of November is a lack of broad economic stability in the United States. They say the Democrats' imminent loss of the House of Representatives would lead to a divided government and make implementing economic solutions at the federal level even more difficult, thus fueling more problems for the economy, which will in turn create economic problems for the already struggling American households. The Washington Post has also covered the same story. As the conflict in Ukraine drags into winter, Americans are divided over whether Washington should push Ukraine to reach a negotiated peace deal with Moscow as soon as possible. Republican backing for aid to Ukraine has slipped since the spring, with 55% of Republicans saying they support sending military aid, compared with 68% in July and 80% in March. According to the Chicago Council's findings, half of Republicans favored providing economic assistance to Ukraine last month, compared with roughly three-quarters back in March. The United States announced its latest tranche of military aid to Ukraine recently, the 25th since August of 2021. The Defense Department, the Pentagon, said $400 million package, including additional arms, munitions, and equipment, brings the total U.S. military assistance to Ukraine to nearly $20 billion since President Joe Biden took office. With Russia's special operation in Ukraine in its 10th month, according to a survey, the American public is split over whether Washington should urge Ukraine to reach a peace settlement with Russia imminently. A plurality, 40%, said the United States should continue its current levels of support to Ukraine indefinitely. 53% of Democrats favor this approach. In July, however, 58% of Americans responded saying The United States should help Ukraine for as long as it takes, even if that means higher gas and higher food prices for American consumers. Now 47% say Washington should push Kiev to reach a peace settlement with Moscow as soon as possible. A plurality of Republicans, however, would opt to gradually withdraw U.S. support from Ukraine. With Republicans soon to take control of the House of Representatives, ushering in an era of divided government, proposals for additional aid to Ukraine could face more resistance. Ahead of the midterm elections last month, some Republican candidates campaigned on ending financial support for Ukraine. Representative Kevin McCarthy, the Republican nominee to be the next House Speaker, has said Republicans will not write a blank check for Ukraine. In October, the Group of Seven G7 leaders formally endorsed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's so-called terms for a peace deal, which would require Russia to withdraw from eastern Ukraine. But General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, suggested to reporters recently that the moment could be approaching for Ukraine to negotiate with Russia. General Mark Milley suggested to reporters that it was unrealistic to think Ukraine could recapture the 20% of its land annexed by a referendum to Russia. CNN has also covered the same story. Another opinion poll offered some insight into how Americans' responses to foreign policy questions can vary depending on the framing that they are presented with. The national survey from Marquette Law School found that whilst 45% of U.S. adults supported Congress sharply reducing aid to Ukraine, 52% said in a separate question that the United States was providing too much support to Ukraine. A number of Republican House members have argued the incoming Republican majority should support reducing aid to Ukraine, including Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, Chip Roy of Texas. Representative Jim Banks of Indiana said in October that the United States can't put America first by giving a blank check to those around the world to solve their problems. 57 Republicans in the House of Representatives and 11 in the U.S. Senate voted against the $40 billion Ukraine aid bill back in May. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy appeared to say in October that Republicans supported slowing down financial support for Ukraine, but later clarified that he still supported sending financial aid while encouraging greater oversight. Also, mainstream Republicans recently rallied behind a resolution sponsored by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, to audit U.S. military and economic aid for Ukraine, sending their strongest signal yet that the Biden administration will face strictest scrutiny of its support for the war effort when control of the House of Representatives shifts to the Republicans next year.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss questions, issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. Well, self-confidence is something that's the most important psychological factor that plays an important role in the self-management of a child and adults as well. So to discuss more on the topic, today in our studio, we have with us a very special guest, an educationalist, Dr. Ali Alavi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me here.
Welcome.
It's a great pleasure for me to be here.
It's an honor to be with you, sir. Discussing about self-confidence, the signs that show your child has a boosted self-confidence or the signs that showed your child has lowered self-confidence has made us eager to know what are the things that can strengthen, boost, and uplift the self-confidence in children.
Yeah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. We have been talking about some elements and factors that led to lack, or let's say weakening of the self-confidence of our children or our kids. Now we are going to work on some elements and talk about some elements that actually strengthens the self-confidence in our kids. And we said most of our, let's say, subjects are the children of 9 years and 10 years and even above, because usually infants and preschoolers, automatically they have their own self-confidence and there is no concern and worries about them, because automatically they, as the pure and, let's say, creatures of God, they have this self-confidence in their own selves in abundance. Mm-hmm. So they don't need any more self-confidence.
Yeah.
But it's our duty to balance them, inshallah, slowly in their ages of, for example, less from 6 to 9.
Yeah.
There are some ways that we want to talk about them here in order to strengthen this self-confidence. First of all is to show our love and affection towards our kids. This is the first, let's say, key point that I want to refer to, that we have to, we naturally love our kids. It doesn't mean that when we are
but
talking, we have
to show that.
We have to show this love and affection
express
to our kids.
Express that.
Usually, sometimes we love, we do love our kids, but we do not show it. Yeah. But it is necessary to show this love and affection.
All right.
We have to prove to this kid that we really love him, not show it in an artificial way just to make us pretend that we love them. No. We can prove that. We can prove this kind of love and affection to them. How? We can actually dedicate a part of our time to them and actually, go to bed with them and read some stories for them and to show that we really love them.
Express
and
it the way we
definitely,
can.
Definitely. You know, sometimes it's quite famous that kids of, let's say, lower ages get happy when they are kissed, right?
Yeah.
But when we see our kids are actually they exceed the age of 10 and over, we do not find this sort of sympathy to actually hug them and to shake hand with them, and but they are important. We have to try to make them see. We have it even in our religious teachings and trainings that we have to shake our hands with them and try to even hug them in our chest and just to touch them in order to let them know that we love you.
Yeah.
It's true that, for example, you fail in this case or on the other issue or in the other,
the other way
is you have failed in some, in this case or in the other way or in the issue, but it does not mean that I do not love you. So,
you have to show one or the other way that you love your children. You have got to express that to your children.
So there are many, many ways, let's say more than 1,000 ways just to show them that we love them.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Well, Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Dr. Ali Alafi. And Dr. Alafi, you said before going to the break that love and affection is important to show to your children so that they can feel, you can boost their self-confidence. You remind me of one of the incidents in Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. The incident while he was hugging and kissing the children of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamu Alayha, and when a man comes in and sees this incident and he feels awkward and says to Prophet, peace be upon him, "What are you doing hugging and kissing them? I have 10 children and I have never hugged or kissed any one of them." And the Prophet, peace be upon him, replies, "What it has got to do with me if Allah has taken away mercy from your heart?" And then we have in hadith wherein he says that, "Show mercy so that you get blessed with mercy." So it's very important to show love and affection through hugging, through kissing, or let's learn from Prophet, peace be upon him. As you said, as a child grows, we are unable to hug and kiss more, but he would stand up when Fatima, salamu alayha, would enter, or he would just show honor and respect in many different ways.
Very true. Thank you very much for this very beautiful point. There is another way to strengthen their self-confidence is to play with our kids and children and dedicate some time with them. I mean, we have to spend some of our time with our kids. So we cannot say that we love our kids, but I can't find any free time.
I don't have time.
Yeah, I have no time to be with my kids. I don't know how can we answer these, let's say, questions that in our today's life that we are actually benefited with too many devices, electronic and non-electronic devices, and we actually spend too much of our time with them, so what, we cannot find even 5 minutes per day to spend with our kid. Based on some, let's say, researches that have been done, a parent, or let's say parents, at least need to spend 20 minutes with their kids per day. At least. When I'm talking about the at least 20 minutes, it does not mean that, 20 minutes in the whole day while, for example, we are talking together. No, specifically for some specific person and reasons. For example, I'll go to my kid and talk to him. Okay, what happened? What happened at the school? Or what did you do on your way back from school to home?
Yeah.
And let him talk to you and you talk to him. And you, again, narrate to him or tell him what happened at your workplace and tell him, for example, about the details of this job and, the new job that you have taken recently. So this kind of spending time. Not, okay, yes, we are at home. We sit at the same tablecloth and we
eat dinner together. Watch together.
No, it does not mean when we are talking.
So engage in interaction, you're trying to say.
Sorry?
Engage in interaction.
Definitely. I mean, face to face. For example, 20 minutes for father and 20 minutes for mother. So in case we deduce from this, level of time to be spent with the kids, with our kids. So we actually are working hardly on those elements of weakening and lowering the self-confidence of the kids.
Yes, it's very important. We'll learn more important things from you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Dr. Ali Alavi, and we're talking about self-confidence, the things you as parents can do to boost self-confidence in your children. Before going to the break, Dr. Alavi, you said that parents need to spend quality time with their children to boost their self-confidence.
Definitely. And this time, as I said, is a specific time that has to be actually given to our kids, children, face-to-face, not to any other issue. The times that we spend together, let's say, for example, for fixing a tab, is not included in this time.
Okay.
So We have
specific
to,
time means specific time.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely, in its own sense. It's in pure sense.
Yeah.
We have to be very careful. If we decrease and we actually from this time that we are talking about, or even the time that we need to show our love and affection to them, in case we decrease anything from them, there are others or other elements who actually come
we'll
and take
fill the, up that space.
Will fill up that space. Like, for example, in case we do not pay too much attention, there are others. Let's say TV shows. I don't know. Other cultural and cultural, let's say, elements will come and take your place. For example, the games come and take your place, the place of the father and mother. So this leads again to the same consequences that we have been talking already.
Yeah.
So when they receive less love and affection from the family, they will receive the love and affection from the other side. It can be, I don't know, I mean, untrusted relations and so forth, so on and so forth. So we have to be very careful. We have to, specifically those who have daughter and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala,
daughters.
Bless them with daughters.
Yeah.
So even in a hadith, we have that in case you enter home and you have sons and daughters, pay attention first to your daughters. Because it's true that you have to, you should not, and you are not allowed to differentiate between your kids. But when you enter, when you face your daughter, even the other kids understand the sensitivity of the daughters, and they are okay with it. Even the sons are okay in case you pay more attention to your daughter.
Yeah.
So these are the issues and points that we have to take into account. The next element that actually helps us to strengthen the self-confident our kids is to assign some duties and responsibilities to them to be performed by them.
Okay.
I just give you a simple example and inshallah leave the rest for the next show. Sometimes we think that we need to just love our kids and children and we have to leave them freely and to be on their own. I mean, we should not give them any assignments and we should not ask them to do any assignment. And
because kids are kids for parents always.
Yeah, they are kids and okay, everything should be done with through parents. So we think that kids are always kids and they need to be cared and they are not required to do anything. And
as long as
they have
I
to
can
be
do.
At home, just let's say eat and drink and sleep. No. We have to start giving them some assignments. For example, in case we are going to I'm giving some simple examples. In order to put the garbages outside the house, so we ask for their help. For example, yes, our kid is very young. I mean, he or she is almost 7-8 years old. Yes, we have to involve them in these kind of actions and activities. We have to give them some responsibility to see how they are going to do it.
Yeah.
Then from these series of observations that we have, we can make some comments directly or indirectly to correct those, let's say, mistakes.
Yeah,
mostly
and
indirectly.
That way, yeah, your child can develop into a more responsible person in future.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alavi, for being with us. And inshallah, we'll discuss more on the topic in our upcoming sessions. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
The idea that the U.S. democracy is increasingly broken was evidently seen in midterms. Based on an analysis of Federal Election Commission, 465 American billionaires have pumped over $881 million into federal midterm races, with the top 20 donor households giving 73% of the contributions, or collectively more than $643 million. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, "In the US, people are often told that the next election is the most important of their lifetimes, or that they should vote like your life depends on it, because it does. Days away from the next midterm elections in the US, this month's polls show that motivation to turn out is relatively high among both Democratic and Republican voters, as both sets of party leaders amp up the divisive rhetoric and claim that the opposition has a radically different vision for the nation. Their lives are certainly impacted by and, dare to say, endangered by American policy. Sadly, the state of affairs with what they euphemistically call American democracy means that they, as Americans, simply cannot save themselves through elections. If the goal of American elections is to fulfill democracy, then American elections are dysfunctional." A 2014 study published by Cambridge University Press already classified the U.S. as closer to an oligarchy than to a democracy, saying average citizens and mass-based interest groups have little or no independent influence in American policymaking. Indeed, the gap between the policies Americans say they want when polled and the policies enacted by their elected representatives widens with each generation. Donald Trump campaigned in 2016 on a promise that he would end American wars, but once in office, continued their imperial violence. Less than 2 years ago, Democrats got behind John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock in Georgia Senate races and promised that Americans helped elect the two and gave Democrats control of the U.S. Senate. They would cut $2,000 COVID relief checks. The nation pitched in. Campaign contributions from all over the nation poured into Georgia on behalf of the Democratic candidates, and the pair were elected. Nearly 2 years later, the main campaign promise, $2,000 COVID relief from Democrats, is still unfulfilled. Both parties' campaign promise specific things if they elect them and when they get elected and place in sufficient power to deliver on those promises, they simply refuse to do so. Now, they are being asked to give them more power and told that really this time they will give Americans what they promised. They didn't do it in 2021 with the COVID relief checks. Neither party seems very worried about disappointing their base to the point where they get rejected and lose elections. In this venture, capital-styled political system, raising private capital is more essential to the life of a politician or party than winning elections. American voters are being lied to as boldly as ever by politicians, while the opposite of their interests are being pursued by them once in office. The U.S. proxy war against Russia in Ukraine is just the latest and perhaps the most dangerous example. A clear majority of poll Americans say they want the U.S. to pursue direct peace negotiations with Russia. Despite this, both Democrats and Republicans are voting uniformly to give billions more to weapons makers to fuel the violence in Ukraine,
And the Biden administration's top diplomat's official policy has been pointedly and proudly not to speak with his Russian counterparts. Americans want their government to negotiate peace, and all the latter has done thus far is help dissuade peace negotiations. If only the lone problem with American elections were that they situated politicians in power who refuse to implement policies voters want. Alas, their elections are more fundamentally fraught than that. Democrats say baselessly that Republicans are under Russian control. Republicans say, without evidence, that Democrats are stealing election victories. Meanwhile, people of color continue to get thrown off voter rolls. They have no national uniformity with voting procedures, which means, among other things, some Americans only have to cross the street to cast a quick vote on election day, while others have to drive miles past police barricades and wait in lines at poorly operating polling centers. U.S. general presidential elections are literally undemocratic because U.S. votes don't count legally. Only those of the several hundred members of their electoral college do. If democracy is the point of American politics is dysfunctional. Democracy is not lucrative, however. Don't be surprised if members of both major parties decide not to include the voters' desires in next year's plans. The money continues to pour into members of both parties, and the big donors contributing to those coffers will continue to wield much more influence over American politics than any non-wealthy voters. In this regard, the website of Truth Out noted, in the current political landscape, fascism is on the rise, and the threat to democracy is imperiled both as an ideal and promise. A number of politicians running for a variety of political offices believe in conspiracy theories, embrace elements of white supremacy, are election deniers, and argue for white Christian nationalism and policies that endorse voter suppression and the banning of books, among other repressive measures. All of these positions should be understood as toxic elements of a rhetoric fueling the neo-fascism embraced by most of the Republican Party, a rhetoric of historical erasure, hate, bigotry, and a politics of disposability. Fascism in the United States is no longer a spiraling improbability, while President Biden claimed in a recent speech that the coming election puts democracy on the block, he vastly underestimates the degree to which the resurgent right wing could soon usher in a fascist politics in the United States. What must not be forgotten is that the politicians advocating these anti-democratic authoritarian positions are not rogue deviants. Rather, they are symptoms of a much wider culture of fascism that condones and normalizes their bigotry and encouragement of violence. They are the new face of a fascist politics. Hunting the U.S. fascist rhetoric is no longer underground in the U.S. It has been awakened and is embraced without apology with the emergence of a new form of brutality. This is a brutality that basks in the language of demagogues, encourages those who trade in lies and ignorance, and manipulate public opinion in the service of tyrants and violence. This rebranded form of fascist politics and its advocates in the coming election share the collapse of conscience reinforced by a form of historical erasure that forgets that their language echoes a history that led to genocide, massive deaths, and assaults on human dignity. This rhetoric exceeds and targets more than any one specific group. It goes far beyond. This rhetoric is now part of a broader language of disposability aimed at migrants, people of color, refugees, and others. What should be condemned here is not only their actions, but also a society that has allowed this fascism to become once again normalized. What should be understood and interrogated in the age of rebranded fascism is the broad-based attack by anti-democratic forces in the Republican Party and their allies on those critical political, cultural, and social institutions that attempt to create informative and critically engaged citizens. The sinister nightmare of a fascist takeover no longer resides in the works of dystopian fiction. It is here in the present, functioning as a lethal fairy tale defined by a contempt for democracy and heralding political doom. The threat of fascism is no longer a matter of speculation. It is about to be put to a vote in an election that could transport the unthinkable form, being a provocative fiction, to a cruelly excruciating reality.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.